And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky back here for Move the Sticks. A little two-week break on the podcast, but excited to be back here with my partner, Bucky Brooks. What's up, man?
Not too much, DJ. How's everything going? How's 2 weeks of no podcast life been treating you?
Oh, it's been nice, man. I've got some flag football games in. I've got a couple track meets in. We've had got my son's going into ninth grade, so you got to step it up a little bit, get the workouts going with him. So lots of family stuff, and then in the evenings having a little, I call it pleasure watching, a little tape party. Projects to work on.
All right, a little tape party. It's been good.
What have you been up to, man?
Same deal here. Kind of having a chance to kind of cast my eyes on the 2019 draft class, looking at some of the top quarterbacks, some of the top players, just trying to get a feel for those guys, kind of getting an early jump on the summer tape watching, and then just trying to stay on the phone, trying to hear who's doing what during OTAs and offseason workouts. So it's been pretty good.
Have you had anybody give you a concern about a draft? Don't tell me the name, but has there been anybody?
Not yet. Not yet, but sometimes you can kind of hear it in their voice that maybe – just maybe they weren't what they thought, but
yeah,
it's early.
They don't say anything negative usually, but
they just don't say anything. They just don't say anything.
Yeah, yeah. Who's standing out to you? And they start rattling off all these other picks. And I'm like, huh? Mention their first round pick. He didn't stand out. And then you ask him about him. Oh yeah, no. He's fine.
Yeah.
Let's go through what we're going to talk about today. We've got some OTA storylines we're looking forward to. We'll kick into that a little bit. I spend this time in May, once we finish the draft, in June is when I'll start looking ahead to some of the next year guys. You've already got a leg up on me, look at some of these college kids. I like to spend that month of May and try and do some fun projects, look at some NFL guys, some top-tier players. So I've looked at some top quarterbacks, some receivers, and some edge rushers. So I'll tell you what I've learned from watching those guys. You had an interesting trip to visit with one of the top offensive minds in all of football. So I'll tease that a little bit because we're going to get into that a little bit later on in the show as well. So we've got some fun topics here today.
Yeah, fun topics. I'm excited to get back to it.
All right, let's jump off here. How about some OTA storylines we're looking forward to? What do you say we go three apiece here, and why don't you kick us off?
The New York Giants offense with Saquon Barkley. I feel like we talked about Saquon Barkley joining the Giants for maybe 6 months. We wondered what it would look like. Would they take him? Would they take a running back at number two overall? And they did. So now I want to see what does it look like when they put all the pieces together on the field. OTAs are just kicking off. We'll have an opportunity to see those guys get on the field, do some competitive drills. And I just kind of want to get a feel for how Mike Shula and Pat Shurmur will use Saquon Barkley, not just as a runner but as a receiver. I am curious to see, are they going to be a team that is an 11 personnel team? One back, one tight end, three wideouts. How will they use those guys? And will they move Odell Beckham Jr. around a lot? So with a lot of new toys, a lot of weapons at his disposal, what would Pat Shurmur do to help this offense really help carry Eli Manning as he reaches the twilight of his career?
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch that team. I'm just looking at their schedule book, week one against Jacksonville. So you've got a new-look offense, some upgrades there. They hope with the offensive line, when you go out and get a Nate Solder, you go out and draft a Will Hernandez in the second round, you hope you've upgraded yourself there. But when I look at that group, it's still some nice upgraded pieces, but all five across the board, there's still some leaky spots there, and I'm mainly staring there at Eric Flowers. And if you have a weak spot against a defensive front like the Jags, they will find it, and they will find it quickly.
Yeah, they absolutely will find a way to exploit it. That's not the way that you want to ease into your new tenure as a head coach, Pat Shurmur, having to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. That defense is lights out. But it will be an interesting challenge for him to be able to come up with a nice game plan to showcase all the new weapons like they obviously want to do in a season debut, while also protecting Eli Manning and trying to find a way to win a game. This is a tough matchup for the New York Giants, but they have all offseason, the game plan for it. I'm excited to see what they do at 26 Saquon Barkley.
And I think Ingram is going to be kind of the key piece there that people kind of forget about when you're talking about Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham. Man, Evan Ingram, with what some of the things he did last year, going to be more space for him to operate now with a guy like Saquon Barkley. This is going to be fun, no doubt, to watch that offense. I'm looking forward to it. My first storyline I'm looking forward to, Buck, I feel like we had a premature burial for the wide receivers last year's draft class.
Yep.
Those first round wide receivers didn't do anything. And oh, you start hearing that B word. I remember last year at this time we heard that B word with a guy named Jared Goff. And that was just
a little early
on that one. So I'm looking at you. I'm looking at guys like Corey Davis. I'm looking at Mike Williams. Can those guys be healthy, have a full offseason? Can they make that big jump? And then John Ross, who was the most disappointing easily of all these wide receivers last year, can he kind of figure things out in the offseason and find a role on this Bengals offense? But those three second-year wide receivers, I'm looking for them to take a step forward. Really, really excited to see those first two, too, because I believe Corey Davis and Mike Williams, that was a health thing more than any kind of a production or a skill set issue. I think they're going to be just fine.
No, I think hopefully all three of these guys will be fine. I really liked them all. I thought they all had bright futures when we evaluated them a year ago. I think the big thing in working backwards, John Ross, the thing that I read recently where he started talking about his rookie season and how the expectations, losing a little confidence, then getting hurt, just trying to find his way to be the special player. He is a guy that the Cincinnati Bengals need. They need someone that can take the top off the defense to create opportunities for A.J. Green and others running those intermediate routes. So they need him to get back. They need him to play like the player that he was at UW. They need him to be a big play specialist. If he can just get back to being able to just catch the deep balls and to stretch the field, he is well worth what they expended to get him in the first round. The other two guys, I think those guys have to emerge as number one options. I know Keenan Allen is the number one with the Chargers, but you need someone on the other side that can command and demand attention. I think Mike Williams can do that. We've seen Phillip Rivers can elevate any wide receiver. He is not afraid to throw the ball to anybody and everybody on the perimeter. I look for Mike Williams to have a bounce back year. Corey Davis is interesting because the Tennessee Titans have a new offensive coordinator. Matt LaFleur takes over. He is teaming up with Marcus Mariota. How are they going to reshape this offense to help elevate the play of the young quarterback? Corey Davis has to be a big part of that because he's probably their number one weapon in the passing game on the perimeter. How would they use him? How would they build the passing game with him in mind while also helping cater to Marcus Mariota?
I was looking at this, going back to the Chargers here real quick with Mike Williams. If you can get him back to the Mike Williams we saw at Clemson, get him healthy, get him rocking and rolling, all of a sudden now you look at this Chargers team. I think Hunter Henry is going to be a monster this year. Antonio Gates is gone. All those targets going to go to Hunter Henry. Mm-hmm. He's an emerging star. And then with Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and Tyrell Williams, this kind of looks like those old school Charger teams when Rivers was first getting going, when they had Vincent Jackson and Malcolm Floyd and all that size and physicality, a young athletic tight end. You know, I don't put Melvin Gordon in LT's class, but he's a good young back. This will be the best skill group that Phillips had around him in a long time.
Yeah, because all these dudes will be able to run. They can all make plays. They can take the ball off the rim. They expand the strike zone for him. And we have seen him. He has been his best when he's had those big body playmakers all over the perimeter. We think about his heyday years under Norv Turner. It's because he had big guys that could go and get it. And the one thing that you can never question about Phillip Rivers is, can he elevate and make a young receiver better? He absolutely can. We've seen him do it with a cast of no names for years and years on end. And the Chargers offense has always been one that has been potent, particularly in the passing game. Now you give him some legitimate weapons because Keenan Allen, to me, is still a very, very special player when healthy. Hunter Henry is one of the best young tight ends. He will emerge and probably finally earn Pro Bowl recognition this year. And then you have a guy like Mike Williams, who is as talented as they come. You get those three guys on the perimeter with a running game that is credible and a defense that is going to consistently give them the ball back. The Chargers, they're a lot of people's favorite to be like a dark horse contender. But right now, when you look at them on paper, they have everything that you absolutely could want in a squad.
It could be a fun year there for the Los Angeles Chargers. Let's get now to your next one here. What's your point number two here you're looking forward to in these OTAs?
Josh Rosen is a legitimate number one quarterback. When you talk to people, look, I read the reports and I saw the coaches and the players kind of glowing about his play and performance down in the workouts. And so then you put in a call and then you hear from Cardinals officials like, hey, man, this dude is much better than we even anticipated. The way that he throws, the natural talent that he's displayed, the way that he's had a command of the huddle, he looks like a pro from day one. And we talked about it. He would be the best quarterback of the class if he went to a team that was already kind of ready to go. So even though he was the last of the big four to go, I think he's probably in the best situation. And because of that, he is going to look better than those guys early. And maybe those guys will catch up with him late. But coming out the gate, I think he has an opportunity with David Johnson talking about he wants to be another 1,000 guy like a Marshall Faulk and a Roger Craig, where he has 1,000 receiving yards and rushing yards, which is crazy. Larry Fitzgerald as a number one receiver. And then Christian Kirk, who they've told me has been an outstanding route runner, he has a lot of things going on. I don't know about that offensive line, but if he gets protected, he absolutely can dazzle in a fantastic way as a rookie.
My sneaky good signing for them, too, is Bryce Butler, who did some good things there for the Cowboys last year.
Big play kind of threat.
Under the radar signing there for them, so we'll see how he does. But, yeah, look, it's not going to surprise me in the least if Josh Rosen comes out here. He's a starter day one, beating out Sam Bradford. If he was the rookie of the year, I don't know that any of us would really be shocked if that were to take place. I expect big things there from Rosen. I'm with you on that one. For my next point, though, I'm going to stay in this rookie quarterback class. I've got my ears open. Obviously, won't get to see everything with these OTAs, but Lamar Jackson versus Joe Flacco. I don't know if I'm more intrigued to see how they incorporate Lamar Jackson and how well he does, or if I'm more excited to see how Joe Flacco responds to this challenge and to this push he's getting. I mean, there's no hinting at anything. This is in your face. Your play has not been good enough. We drafted your replacement. It's up to you how long you're going to hold on to this job, because Lamar Jackson is coming, and he's coming quick. So to me, it's going to be fascinating to see. Do we hear reports that Flacco is really dialed things up a little bit, or is Lamar Jackson going to catch him sooner than later?
It'll be interesting to see how Joe Flacco responds. Everyone, I would love to believe, all franchise quarterbacks are prideful. They see themselves as the anointed ones. They see themselves as the kings of the castle. And so now you bring someone in, a Lamar Jackson, who is also feeling like he's going to be anointed. He's the next coming. How does Joe Flacco fend off that challenge? Does he step his game up and up? Does he put a little more time in when it comes to the preparation part of it? Does he elevate his leadership ability when it comes to interacting with his teammates? We know that there's going to be a fascination with Lamar Jackson and the athleticism and the wild plays that he's going to bring on the field. His teammates will like that part of it. But can Joe Flacco be the steady eddying force that shows to the veterans he is the best guy to get the job done, to get them back into the postseason? We'll see how that plays out. This training camp is going to be fascinating to see how Joe Flacco deals with the pressure of having his successor in his background.
One of the things I was thinking about at this point, because anytime you have the veteran versus the rookie, right, in a competition for position, the veteran does have some advantages there. And some of those advantages are you look at the skill position players around them. They've got a comfort level with them, so they have a timing and a rhythm. They've been playing with these guys for a while. Another advantage you look at is just having that support in the locker room. You've been through those wars with those guys, and so they have that in their mind. Okay, maybe it wasn't great recently, but we were there for the good times. I look at this Ravens group, Buck. Willie Snead, he wasn't there last year. Michael Crabtree, he wasn't there last year. John Brown, nope. Look at the tight end position. Hayden Hurst, Mark Andrews, the two rookies they drafted, nope. So Lamar Jackson's almost kind of on an equal footing. Now, obviously, Joe Flacco's been in this system, but in terms of developing a relationship and confidence with your teammates, they're starting out dead even here.
Absolutely. When you bring so many new guys in, you're right, they're starting out brand new, fresh slate. The two young tight ends, rookies, you can't underestimate the time that they've already had with Lamar Jackson, the chemistry and connection that they will naturally build as classmates. These guys will be around each other all the time, and so that certainly gives him a leg up. And then you talked about all the new additions, John Brown, Willie Snead, Michael Crabtree. Those are guys that aren't longtime Ravens, so they don't know about Joe Flacco. They don't know about Joe Flacco and the improbable Super Bowl run that helped him get that big contract. So now he is going to have to earn their trust and their respect and all that other stuff by the way that he performs. You're right. They're in a dead heat for this battle for number one. And even though team officials will say, nah, Joe Flacco's that guy, just know that they're looking, they're evaluating, they're looking at the chemistry between Joe Flacco and his teammates and Lamar Jackson and those teammates, and they may kind of err on the side of taking the young guy because they have more time to develop him.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one to watch there. I guess maybe Crabtree was familiar because he was on the other sideline in that Super Bowl. But outside of that, no, these guys do not have any experience together. So it's going to be fun to watch that Ravens quarterback battle. What do you say we stay with the quarterback position? What's your next one here?
How about Kirk Cousins in a new Minnesota Vikings offense? And a lot of the conversation in the offseason will be all about Kirk Cousins, and is Kirk Cousins a guy that can help them get one step closer? But I'm going to say, look, it's not even really about Kirk Cousins. It's about the play caller. Pat Shurmur did such a great job of elevating the play of every quarterback that took a snap for the Minnesota Vikings during his time there, whether it was Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, anybody who took a snap had a successful game plan that allowed them to play at their best. Well, what happens now? Because Pat Shurmur is not there. Flip comes over from Philadelphia. He takes over. I think it's his first time as a true play caller. How is he able to take all the weapons that the Minnesota Vikings have on offense? Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph, Dalvin Cook, some of the other guys. How does he mix all of that to make sure that everyone is satisfied and productive? The challenge is on Kirk Cousins, but it's also on the play caller. This is a fascinating one to watch for me.
I'll tell you what, and we'll get to some of the guys I've been watching, but Adam Thielen was one of those. So I watched a lot of the Vikings offense, but Pat Shurmur was phenomenal in terms of scheming things and creating space and getting guys in open space where they can do something after the catch as well. I thought the play design and the play calling was brilliant last year for this Vikings team. So that bar has been set very high for Flip here to come in there and try and match that level, because Shurmur did a heck of a job last year.
I mean, he did. He did a fantastic job. One of the best play callers that we've seen. The way that he continued to elevate Case Keenum's play throughout the course of the regular season speaks volumes about his ability to take a scheme and really mold it around a player. We will see if Flip has the same kind of ability. They did a lot of great things in Philadelphia. We saw what they did with Nick Foles. We saw how they changed the offense to really help Carson Wentz find his rhythm. Let's see if they have enough of those lessons in the memory bank to find a way to help elevate Kirk Cousins in Minnesota.
Well, talk about Kirk Cousins being in Minnesota. That means he's no longer in Washington. A lot of changes here in the NFC East, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And that gets me to my last one here, which is the Dallas Cowboys. Who's going to fill the void during these OTAs? Who's going to step up to replace some of the pieces that they lost? I mean, you look at Dez Bryant, obviously not coming off of a great year, but had been the number one wide receiver there for a very long time. You look at Jason Witten. I think he's, what, the fourth all-time leading receiver in NFL history, 15-year veteran, starter, offensive leader for this football team. He retires and goes into broadcasting. So those are two big positions to fill. We mentioned a little bit earlier about Bryce Butler being gone as well. Now you've got Terrence Williams in a little bit of trouble off the field. It's going to be fascinating to see who steps up in the mix here.
Yeah, you know, I think what's interesting about all of these changes, when you lose Dez, you lose Jason Witten, they're in the midst of saying they want this offense to be more Dak-friendly. So what is that? What exactly does that mean? Does it mean we're going to see more spread stuff like he did at Mississippi State, where four and five guys out, ball comes out quick, he is able to make it right by running and making plays? We saw them bring over Tavon Austin. Tavon Austin, to me, is the ultimate gadget player for them. Jet sweeps, bubble screens, and occasional vertical pass. I know they talked about him being a running back, but really he is a wide receiver in a running back's body, and they'll put him in a situation to create mismatches. But who else can step up and give them some production? I think the rookie, Michael Gallup, can be a guy that can eventually be the number one. I like the way he plays. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Michael Crabtree in a way. Kind of a glider, smooth, but he has a little more physicality. Does all the dirty work. The rest of the guys have to go to work. When you think about Cole Beasley being able to work, coming off that nice rap album that is getting a lot of attention. Cole Beasley spitting bars. But Cole Beasley is a guy that's going to have to be in the front runner. So I'm curious to see what this offense looks like, but I think it begins and ends with the offensive line and Zeke. If they're able to run the ball, I think it will be fine.
Yeah, Allen Hurns coming over from the Jags. Be interested to see what he can do. I wouldn't sleep on Cedric Wilson, kind of a sleeper there out of Boise in the sixth round. Keep an eye on him. But, again, a lot of new faces there, and then you get to the tight end position. We'll see. Rico Gathers, can he stay healthy? The former basketball player, awesome in the preseason last year. They draft Dalton Schultz from Stanford in the fourth round. They've got Jeff Swaim still there. So, look, some good pieces in place, but absolutely there is no Jason Witten and there is no Dez Bryant in his prime on this roster as it stands. I think it's going to be, let's just pound Ezekiel Elliott and pound him and pound him and pound him and try and take some of the pressure off that inexperienced wide receiver and tight end core.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only way you have to do. You have to ground it and pound it. You have to make sure that you play keep away. your offense is your best defense. When they won in 2014, it's because the offense on average had time possession around 32 minutes. Defense not playing as many snaps. Offensively, they have to get back to that tried and true formula. That is the way they win games and win it at a high level.
All right, the fun little offseason storylines we're looking forward to following there. So we'll keep an eye on those, keep tabs on those as we go through the summer here. Buck, I mentioned it at the top, I'd like to spend this time after the draft, take a little bit of a break, and then I like to dig in and watch some NFL players. The reason for that is you spent 6 months studying college guys, and then you want to go back and kind of recalibrate your eyes a little bit about what the bar, what the standard looks like. So I'll go through position by position, try and identify five guys, handful of guys, sometimes more, of the top players, or even some just intriguing players to me that I want to study. And then it kind of resets your eyes a little bit to, okay, this is what we're looking for here as we get back into the college guys again in that next cycle. It shows you what works at the next level. It shows you what you need to perform at a high level. And it's just, it's been a fun project for me over the years. I enjoy it.
Yeah, I think these things are always fun. I had a longtime mentor always encourage me, go look at what plays in the league. In your mind, what you think is playing is something completely different than what is actually playing. There are guys that are playing for a long time in the league and maybe even earning Pro Bowl honors who are flawed players. And so if you can see what the league is producing, what is dominating the league, it may allow you to be a better grader when it comes down to looking at the college guys. You may be a little more patient. You may be able to project a little bit more on guys who are going to be really, really good players down the line. I love this part of the offseason because those projects really are kind of a win-win. It helps you personally, but it also helps those around you when it comes to grading because they also see better competition.
All right, so we'll kind of, I got a lot of guys that I've done so far here looking at quarterbacks, receivers, and some edge rushers. So let's kind of go a little bit rapid fire here. I'll go through and just give you my main takeaways from that. Tag it with your thoughts on it, Buck, and we'll just kind of roll through these guys. You ready? All right, let's start here. First one, start with the GOAT here in Tom Brady. One of the things you notice with a lot of these top-tier quarterbacks, you get in third down, you've mentioned it forever. We've talked about it a lot. They want more options, not less options. I mean, it is five-man protection. Get everybody, get five guys out into the route and let them make quick decisions. So Tom Brady, the way he processes, jumps off the tape, you better be able to get to him with a four-man rush. If you blitz him, you are dead. He will carve you up. The other thing that jumped out to me, his pocket movement is elite. It's as good as anybody in terms of being able to move inside that phone booth.
Yep.
And always gets back to a balanced position. Some of these guys, and we'll get to Stafford here in a minute, can make all these off-platform throws. Tom Brady always gets to a balanced position. He's so consistent there, and I think that's why he's so dang accurate.
He's great getting the ball out of his hands. He understands the passing game. He really understands how to manipulate the matchups, how to create the matchups. And the one thing that you see with Tom Brady and some of the other veterans, they live and spread in empty formations because it allows them to identify the rushers and also exploit coverage. They will stay in that if they get you in a matchup that is favorable for them. And he doesn't mind patiently carving you up with paper cuts. At the end of the day, he's going to cut your arm off, but it's going to be a million little paper cuts. They do a great job of doing it, and he is the driving force behind that offense.
Well, I just think it's pretty simple. When you look at the greatest advantage for a defense is a linebacker rushing a running back, and the greatest advantage for an offense is a running back being able to attack a linebacker in the passing game. So Tom Brady and those veteran guys, they want to get those guys out in the route. Don't ask them to sit back there and block. Let's exploit these linebackers in coverage. So that was one of the things that jumped out to me with him. Carson Wentz, first thing that jumps out, just the sheer size and strength inside the pocket. And for, you know, comes this draft season, we talked a bunch about some of the guys have size, some that don't. One of the benefits of that is just the sheer strength. When you have guys draped on you, bodies around you, somebody's hitting you, somebody's getting your leg, he can still generate plenty of velocity. He's just so dang big and strong. He will hold the ball sometimes a little bit too long in the pocket. But to me, the velocity is easy for him. Tight window throws. He can squeeze the ball in, and he's very aggressive.
No, I mean, you talk about a guy that is kind of like the new prototype. We talk about these athletic playmakers at the position, guys who can really affect the game in a number of ways. I love the talent when you watch them coming out, and I think they have done a great job of surrounding him with playmakers and putting him in a scheme that plays to his strengths. And so – as I'm looking at these new school quarterbacks and who is going to be the next torchbearers, you certainly have to talk about him because there are so many things to like about his game.
Yeah, one area I would say that Carson can do better, obviously protecting himself as a runner. You know, don't take those shots, which led to an injury last year. The other thing I would say is he could study Tom Brady and learn a little bit from him just in terms of being able to navigate within the pocket. He's so athletic, he'll wheel out the back door, kind of like a bigger Russell Wilson in that regard. But there's times where he has space. If he can slide and climb and move around within the pocket, he'll save some hits off of himself, and he also generates more big plays to go with it. So that would be the one area for Carson where he can improve. But he was on his way to being the MVP for a reason. Drew Brees, next one up. Along with Brady, just the processing, how quick. You know, you watch all their third down throws, how quick he can find the one-on-one that he wants and get the ball out immediately. It's anticipation, it's timing, it's touch, it's quick decision-making. He's one that can change arm angles on screens. They'll throw a lot of screens. You can see him get it out from all different slots and still be very accurate. Does not have elite velocity, without question. But he'll use his eyes and ball fakes to manipulate coverage better than any quarterback in the league. He's able to move safeties away from where he wants to go with the ball. It's fun to watch.
He is fun to watch. And I think it's really important to watch Drew Brees now with more of these quarterbacks that are kind of coming in the league kind of below what we call the standard line in terms of height. For years, it's always been 6'2 is kind of what you wanted. Your 6'2 or tall is what you wanted your quarterback. Well, now we're having these guys come in from the college game. We saw Baker Mayfield go number one overall, who wasn't a 6'2 player. There's some other guys in the college draft, Will Greer from West Virginia, who won't come in as a super tall guy. So now when you're making the comparison, as we always do when it comes to scouting reports, we always throw out, hey, Drew Brees and Russell Wilson. I think the thing that gets lost when we look at Drew Brees, he also – was a world-class athlete like a Russell Wilson. This is a national-level tennis player that beat Andy Roddick. So when you look at his footwork and the way that he slides around in the pocket, it's not someone that is a stiff. His ability to find passing lanes, to change arm angles, to do all of the other stuff that you have to be able to do to really overachieve as an undersized quarterback, he does that. And I'm looking at a guy who, as he gets older, he understands how to use his weapons even better. Using the backs, use the tight ends, use the underneath guys, allow those guys to make plays for him. So it may be a 10-yard pass, air yards, but it goes to a 30, 40-yard gain. It's because Drew Brees understands how to stretch the field horizontally while still retaining the ability to stretch it vertically.
I'm glad you mentioned that because one of my notes said completions. He's a completion collector. So even if you get in third and 11, probably more than any of these other guys I watched, Drew threw underneath the sticks. But it was, hey, we've got pressure coming. I'm not just going to take a sack or throw the ball away. I'll take, if it's third and 11, maybe I'll get 7-8 yards.
Maybe he'll break a tackle. Yes.
Yeah, that guy, all of a sudden he catches the ball, break a tackle, you get a face. It just gives you more options for success. And if nothing else, you've gained 7-8 yards worth of field position that can be pretty valuable in the game. But he's just so poised. That would be the other word I would use for Drew Brees without question. Fun. He is fun to watch still at his age. What a good player. Matthew Stafford, probably the most gifted of the guys that I watched, just in terms of arm talent. Buck, he can be caught flat-footed, bodies draped all over him, and just arm alone just makes some ridiculous throws. One thing he needs to work on, just resetting his feet when he gets movement. He's so gifted. He'll hit, you know, three or four of those off-balance arm angle drops, do all these different crazy things like a trick shot artist. But then, you know, one out of every four or five will get away from him, and that'll affect. That's why he's never been like a high 60s completion percentage guy. There's some mechanical things at times that you get a little bit sloppy and his feet get a little bit too busy. But in terms of just pure arm talent, that phrase that we throw out there, I don't know anybody's better than Matt Stafford.
I mean, he's as talented as they come. He is kind of the prototype for what I call the new school gunslinger, the guy who is super talented, who has A-plus arm talent, who also has the ability to run around and make plays on and off platform. Well, that's Matthew Stafford. And I call heat for this because I just wrote a piece on quarterbacks and why you got to be careful overpaying for quarterbacks. And I used our thing we talk about, trucks and trailers. And I listed Matthew Stafford as a truck. And people are like, oh, my God, how could you say that? And I was like, man, have you looked at what Matthew Stafford does? Matthew Stafford is the one reason that the Detroit Lions are in every game, because as a quarterback, he has the ability in the fourth quarter to wheel them back. And so, yeah, if it was a better team, if he had a running back or someone that could give him 100 yards to balance out what they do offensively, they would win more games. But he hasn't. I read this stat. During his time with the Lions, he only has 7 games where he's had a 100-yard rusher. That's ridiculous. So, for me, Matthew Stafford is the franchise quarterback because he's also learned how to go from being a gunslinger to the last 3 or 4 years. We've seen him manage games better. We've seen him take care of the ball better. We've seen him go to more of the short throws and the completion percentage go up. He has all the stuff that you want a franchise quarterback to have, and it's just a matter of, man, if they ever surround him with the right ingredients, you'll see Detroit win at a high level.
Yeah, I'm with you. The talent is without question there. He could be, you know, if he get the right pieces around him, he has the tools to be a top 3 or 4 quarterback in the league without question. Again, it's just some sloppiness. If he can eliminate some of that sloppiness from his play, I think you'll see him take his game even to a higher level. The last quarterback I looked at in this little project was Philip Rivers. The first thing that jumped out to me when you're watching all these third down throws, the pre-snap communication. Philip does more communication and directing in terms of directing the front, in terms of getting guys shifted in motion. It's demonstrative. It's very Peyton Manning-esque just in terms of all the pre-snap work that he's doing there. And I'm sure some of it is dummy work, where he's just trying to, you know, buy some time and try and get a defense to show themselves. But he does more of that than any of these guys in terms of the pre-snap stuff. And then the second thing was just, this dude is aggressive, man. He is always in attack mode. He works in the middle of the field. He works in crowds. It generates big plays, but it's also, you know, you talk about working in the middle field, you get some of those tips and overthrows. It leads to some of those turnovers. But, man, it is all gas and no brakes with Philip Rivers.
Oh, he is absolutely a killer when it comes to the way that he plays. Super aggressive, does a great job of playing with confidence, and inspires his teammates. Doesn't matter who you throw around him, he finds a way to get it done. Yes, you don't like some of the turnovers that may happen in critical moments, but he is never going to give up on a play. And the thing that I've always liked about Philip Rivers is he has a way of always keeping his team in games regardless of the circumstances. And now I believe we're finally going to be able to appreciate him and his greatness, because I believe the supporting cast he has around him is as good as any that he has ever had. I would look for him to have a lights out season, even an MVP caliber year, because he is that good at the position.
Yeah, I'm with you. I read an article the other day saying, you know, he could play, you know, 4 or 5 more years. And I thought, man, that seems like a long time. But then you look at Breeze, you look at Brady and the level they're playing at. Philip, I think, is 36 years old. So him getting to 40 gets them in the new stadium there in L.A. with the Rams. So, yeah, that wouldn't shock me at all. I think we could see him have a big year. I'm with you on that one. All right, let's go through some of these pass rushes. We'll go faster on these. I want to spend a little bit more time talking about those quarterbacks. But Joey Bosa, first one that I watched, has got the best hands of any of these pass rushers, speed to power. He can play outside. You'll see him just torch guards. But he has so much torque and power in his upper and in his lower body. He's got the great swipe move that he's become known for. He's getting a chance to be a Hall of Fame player. He's that good.
He's that good. I think the biggest lesson that I learned from watching Joey Bosa as a pro and watching him as a collegian, always bank on the artist over the athlete as the pass rusher. When I look at Joey Bosa, Joey Bosa is a skilled pass rusher. Hand skills, movement. He is a trained technician when it comes to learning how to get to the quarterback. And so regardless of what is going on, this guy is always going to be a double-digit sack artist because he is going to outwork and outskill the overwhelming majority of the blockers that he faces. He is terrific. And then to have a guy that you're going to talk about a little later, Melvin Ingram on the other side, the L.A. Chargers have a nasty 1-2 combination off the edge when it comes to heating up the passer. I love what they have, but Joey Bosa is terrific as a technical phenom off the edge.
Yeah, I'll get to his teammate here next, Melvin Ingram. You see the dip rip move. He's got an explosive first step, probably a better first step there than Bosa. He can really wrap around the edge, so he's a nice complement. Bosa kind of brings that power, the swipe move, and you see Melvin Ingram who can bend and wrap around the edge. And Melvin Ingram is an animal as a looper. A lot of times We use that phrase in scouting, say, oh, he's a better blitzer than a pass rusher. Well, he's a good pass rusher. He is. I kind of categorize when you're looping and stunting, it's almost like a game. It's more of a blitz type of a thing than it is with somebody just winning straight up, head up. On games, he is outstanding when you use him as a looper.
He is outstanding. They both are terrific. Melvin Ingram, what I like about him is he's kind of a junkyard dog off the edge. He has really developed a nice move to complement, like, his first step quickness. He can bend and burst. He also has a little long arm, which is funny because he doesn't have long arms, but he does a great job of just kind of bull rushing tackles and kind of driving them back into the quarterback's lap. And I believe the versatility that both of these guys display and being able to go from either side to rush, and for Joey Bosa even to slide inside, they have a lot of unique talents that they are able to kind of throw at the opponent, and just makes it very, very difficult to block either one of these guys in one-on-ones.
No question. Next one, Khalil Mack, the get-off, the raw power, that's there. He's got the Euro step, though. I've got to find the right word to describe the pass rush move, because it's an inside-outside-inside or an outside-inside-outside. It's a three-step mm-hmm. move. It looks just like a Euro step, and it hasn't been around that long in the NFL for some of these edge rushers. But he has it down. It is fun to watch.
He does have it. That hesitation move, or it does look like a Euro step because it does throw off the timing of the offensive tackle. To me, Khalil Mack, what he's been able to do is he just bullies people. He's just a broad street bully off the edge. Like, he's mm-hmm. more powerful than most blockers that come up against him. He has the ability, especially when they line him up at left defensive end, he can use that long arm where he sticks his arm right in the middle of the guy's chest, and he either walks him straight back to the quarterback, or he'll slip inside with an inside arm over move. He's just so powerful that when he continues to add just one more move to the repertoire, he is going to be unblockable. And the success that he has already had, if he can add just another piece of the puzzle, I don't know how you're going to be able to stop him in those pass rush situations, because he's a dominant player already.
No, he's fun. He's fun to watch. Everson Griffin for the Vikings, probably the biggest surprise to me, just because I don't know why I haven't spent much time really studying him at the NFL level. I knew he'd been very productive. But man, when you really study him, his get off is elite. I mean, he got flagged a couple times and wasn't offsides. It's a combination. There's a little bit of snap count anticipation, obviously, but then you couple that with his just burst and explosiveness. I love doing it. I've talked about it before. You freeze the frame. I mean, he is up. He is one. His first step is already in the ground, and you see three other defensive linemen with their hands still in the dirt. So he gets off the line of scrimmage, and then he's developed a nice little complement, nice little inside spin to work off that speed. He's just tremendous, tremendous football player. He was hurt, I think, about halfway through the year, and wasn't quite the same guy at the end of the season. But man, he came out the gate storming last year. He's an elite player.
Very elite player. You think about his ability. Look, and the Minnesota Vikings have done a great job identifying guys on day three that they've developed and had them emerge as dominant players. You think about Everson Griffin has been one. Danielle Hunter has been another. And Everson Griffin, you have a guy who is very, very talented. We saw him at USC, but it was a little up and down. He has now found a way to consistently bring the effort, and he's added the polish and the technique. His first step get off is terrific. He's relentless when it comes to pursuing the quarterback. He is a handful off the edge. Very, very deserving of being one of the top players at the position, because he gets it done. He is terrific.
Yeah, he was a pleasant surprise to me getting to really dig in and study him. Next, Von Miller. Von Miller, you know, look, he's got the most at his disposal when you still look at a pass rush. If you told me you could pick one of these guys, mm-hmm. Joey Bosa has that power, and he's the technician, as you mentioned. Von Miller combines the explosion, the ability to bend and wrap around the edge. But, Buck, I'm telling you, when you really dig in on him, he's got a shake bowl, and he generates some serious power for a guy that doesn't have all that size as some of these other guys on the list. So he can win with speed. He can win with power. He's got a spin. He's relentless. Every now and then he'll get caught, and you saw it last year against Lane Johnson. That clip got put out there a million times where he gets torqued and dumped mm-hmm. there. But in terms of just pass rushing, having the most at your disposal, the best repertoire, Von Miller still has the best repertoire in the league.
You know, DJ, I'm very impacted by some of the guys that I was able to either see firsthand or play with firsthand. And Von Miller, to me, reminds me of my former teammate, the late Derek Thomas, in terms of his get-off, his first-step quickness, his bend and burst, the way that he rounds the corner and dips and rips to get to the quarterback. I mean, it's remarkable. And then you talked about the other things that a lot of people have not talked about. He does have the full gamut when it comes to being able to throw out a variety of moves at you. And to me, he is the ultimate closer. When you're looking at pass rushes, and we're looking at pass rushes in the draft, it's about can you finish a game? And the way that you're able to finish a game, you have so many moves that you're able to get home when they know that you're coming and you still get there. Von Miller, to me, is that guy. He shuts it down. He is Mariano Rivera. He gets it done coming off the edge. And I think when you look at the Denver Broncos and adding Bradley Chubb to the mix and trying to motivate Shane Ray, they potentially could have three pass rushers that can knock quarterbacks around. It's going to be tough. The AFC West is going to be dizzying when you watch the number of pass rushers that can have production off the edges.
Last thing on Vaughn, I'll add, when we're talking scouting terms here, when you're watching offensive linemen, a lot of times we use the phrase, he's got a late anchor, right? So if you picture an offensive lineman blocking a defensive end, he gives some ground, and then he's able to anchor down and stop the charge before you get home, before you get to the quarterback. With Von Miller, he has a second gear in power. It's almost like if you imagine a car going up a hill. When he gets that first resistance, boom, you see the explosiveness, and then you see the tackle anchor down. Well, he can get into another gear to generate more power to power through that late anchor. So, I mean, a lot of times you kind of have that initial charge and then you get stopped. He has a charge all the way through. I mean, the power that he generates to me was the biggest surprise.
Tremendous amount of power. We always talk about being able to turn speed into power. Can you take those first three steps, get to max speed, and then have the decision? I can go around him or I can go through him. He has that ability to do that.
All right, Jadeveon Clowney. Look, you see him rush guards. You'll see him beat tackles. A lot of times he's rushing against the left tackle. A lot of these guys spend their time on the other side rushing those right tackles. I saw him beat Solder. I saw him beat Taylor Lewan. He's got a nasty arm over. You see him split double teams. He gets a lot of attention, especially with J.J. Watt not being there last year. A lot of doubles he faced last year. But the thing I love most about Clowney, when they could get him isolated, put a blitzer outside of him to occupy the tackle, give him room and space versus a guard, and it is no chance.
Tough, terrific, big-time player, and still very, very raw. Still trying to learn the position, I think. I think he just overwhelms you with sheer athleticism and explosive strength and power. We have seen him take over games. I think the best thing that may have happened to him was he was forced to have to step up. When you lose a J.J. Watt, you lose a Whitney Mercilus, they needed him to be the number one guy on that defensive line, and he showed. So now when you bring a J.J. Watt back, depending on how he comes back, you have some monsters on that front line. We talk about pass rushers and how you can never have enough of them. We saw that in the way that the Philadelphia Eagles were able to go to the Super Bowl with so many guys. The Houston Texans have that ability. I think Jadeveon Clowney can go to the front of the line as their number one rusher with the other guys playing as kind of the supporting cast.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch that Texans defense. A couple more pass rushers here, three more. Cam Jordan, man, is he good. Talk about big-time power, speed to power. But the thing, he's really long, Buck. I think he's got 35-inch arms. But he gets his hands inside consistently, and it's teaching tape. And we always talk about it's basic fundamental football. Whoever gets their hands inside wins. And you watch him, he is so consistent and so quick and strong, and he uses his length. He gets his hands, steers offensive tackles wherever he wants to take them. His hands are outstanding. He is an elite player coming off the edge. He's got a little spin move he mixes in there. He's instinctive. He's a finisher. I just wrote down A-plus power and leverage with Cam Jordan coming off the edge. I remember him coming out. Is he going to be a three technique? Is he going to be a one technique? Can he play in? He is a monster defensive end.
I'll admit I missed on Cam Jordan when he was coming out of Cal. I didn't see the pass rusher that he has become. I saw a good player. I saw a guy that was productive, but I didn't think that he would be the phenom that he's been on the league as a pass rusher. I didn't think that he would be a guy that could consistently get to the quarterback. But what he has done is he's developed himself into a really, really nice pass rusher. He's relentless in his effort. I like his play. He's very, very smart in the way he sets his moves up. And he does a great job of really exploiting the matchups. And they give him a lot of freedom at the point of attack. He does a great job of getting home. He's a very, very, very good player.
All right. The next two guys here, Chandler Jones. Effort jumped out to me. He's got a nice little hesitation move. Again, somebody that's good on games is a looper. He uses that, we call it that inside pole, that inside arm, long arm, uses length. create some separation. He's got a little he's got another thing that's fun to watch with pass rushers. I saw this a lot. And I actually was texting with our guy Jim Washburn, who is a kind of legendary defensive line coach, coached all these great players. And I was asking him what this, you know, what would you refer to this technique? But it's just kind of like a duck. It's a duck under move. So if you're trying, if you're listening to this, trying to imagine what it is, you'll see a defensive end come off the ball. He'll present his hands quickly, right? So then offensive lineman will go to punch. He'll pull his hands down and he ducks his head underneath the punch. So he feints a punch. Gets the offensive lineman to extend his arms, and then he ducks underneath it. And he said, go back and watch all J.J. Watt's sacks. He said J.J. Watt's the best at it in terms of that little duck under move. I don't know why. I feel like I haven't seen much of that or studied much of that. But it's fun to watch, Buck.
I mean, it's like being a boxer. It's a counterpuncher. They're doing a great job of setting feints and throwing hands and making you think that something is there that's not there, then they slip past you. These guys are remarkable athletes, and this is why it's becoming even – more difficult to find offensive tackles in the league, because the athletes that they're playing against are not only like explosive athletes with all kinds of speed, quickness, and power. They have an array of moves that make it very, very difficult for non-athletes to stay in front of them. That is why you're seeing the scales tip so heavily to pass rushers in these one-on-one battles.
Yeah, it's fun just to see these different techniques. Again, it's part of the reason why I do this project. It's a lot of fun for me. Last pass rusher to Marcus Lawrence, huge year for the Cowboys. Relentless. He's got, I even put the word nifty down. He's just got a lot of nifty little moves. Got a nifty little inside spin. He beats up tight ends. You'll see him with a little slap rip move where he'll rip his arm through and get through, pop and separate. So you extend your arms, create some distance, and then be able to close. He's got a lot of tricks in his bag as well. What a huge year he had for the Cowboys.
Huge year. Big year. Now, the next thing for DeMarcus Lawrence is he has to be able to step his game up. He had 10 sacks very, very early in the season. Had a tough time kind of getting that number up once people start paying attention to him. The difference between the good and the great are always able to deliver despite facing double teams, despite facing all the attention on them. They're able to give their team that much-needed splash play when the game is on the line. We need to see more from DeMarcus Lawrence. He certainly has skills. He's certainly done it for a year. He did it last year. Let's see if he can do it again and kind of earn his way into that VIP club when it comes to pass rushers.
No question. I think he's on his way there if he can stack another year like last year and this upcoming year. Just three quick wide receivers. I got more receivers to watch. I'm just starting that. But what I've seen so far, started with Keenan Allen. Interested to watch him. We both loved him coming into the draft. You know, he had the knee, and so he kind of fell a little bit. But he's had a phenomenal career when he's been healthy, inside, outside guy. But to me, if you're a young wide receiver listening to this and you want to know how to release off the line of scrimmage,
watch
Keenan Allen. He is a technician, Buck. I put some plays out there on Instagram. You can find it. It's just Move the Sticks on Instagram. You can see some of them. But, Buck, he's phenomenal on the line of scrimmage.
I mean, he plays like a small man. Like, anytime you see someone 6'3 that has wiggle like that at the line of scrimmage, he plays like a small player. His releases, his ability to really stutter step and give you a variety of moves at the line makes him very, very difficult to jam and challenge. And then, he's not a blazer, but he has enough speed. He has enough speed to get vertical. He makes plays, has great hands. He's a terrific player. And you're right. If he was a guy that could consistently stay healthy, we would be talking about him in the top five with some of the other greats that we always talk about year after year after year.
It does a lot of dirty work, too. You see him on slants, working in the middle of this field, working in traffic. I talked earlier about Phillip Rivers being aggressive. A lot of those balls are to Keenan Allen in highly populated areas. And he takes some shots. So I love his toughness. Next one, Adam Thielen from Minnesota. I talk about Keenan Allen at the line of scrimmage. And Thielen does a nice job at the line of scrimmage, a little stronger than I thought. But what makes him so effective and so productive last year is what he does at the top of the route. If you're a receiver, again, you want to study somebody getting in and out of the break point efficiently, no wasted movement, polished. That's Adam Thielen at the top of the route.
Unbelievable. Underrated. Been underrated for 2 years. Finally starting to get the attention that he deserves. This is a guy that is a route runner. We've talked about it. Like, one thing that we've learned from receivers, if a guy's a route runner, he always has a chance to be successful. Adam Thielen does a great job of really setting defenders up with fakes. He has a lot of stuff that he can throw at you at the top of the route to consistently create separation. I love watching him play. I think he doesn't get enough credit for what he's been able to do. He's been one of the more productive players over the last two seasons. We're just beginning to appreciate his game. But you're right. What he's able to do, he is textbook. he's clinic. He's teaching tape when it comes to how to get open as a wide receiver.
Phenomenal. The last one that I've watched here, again, just kind of at the beginning phase of this wide receiver project, DeAndre Hopkins for the Texans. He's silky smooth. Everything about him is very smooth. Now, he is not as technical a route runner as a guy like Keenan Allen or even Adam Thielen, but he's got a huge catch radius, so he catches and wins a lot of 50-50 balls. He's physical at the top. So you see a lot of guys physical at the line of scrimmage. He's found a way, the way he does it at the top of his route, to create some separation because he's not a blazer. If you get your hands on the body of a defender and you push off at the top, you're going to get called for it. He has got a great feel for getting just swatting arms down, winning those hand fights. And not only do you win the hand fights, but you create some separation by doing that. He kind of will push a guy off with his arm, and you're not going to get called. They're not going to call the hand fighting. You're not getting your hands on his torso. But he uses that physicality at the top of his route to create a separation.
Does a great job. I think the best thing for New Hopkins, he's a combat catcher. He does a great job of winning the 50-50 balls with people draped on him. I think when you look in his background and you see how exceptional he was as a basketball player, the number of assists and rebounds and things that he had, it's not a surprise that he really excels at winning those plays that are above the rim. And for someone, to me, who is not a blazer, he consistently gets behind the defense somehow. Mm-hmm. It's deceptive. It's sneaky. He does a great job of creating these big vertical splash plays, but yet he doesn't run a phenomenal 40 time. And so to me, it just shows you that there are a bunch of ways to skin a cat. He's mastered all the tricks of the trade. He's a really, really talented player when it comes to his hand-eye coordination. And then you add the fact that he can go up and take it off the rim. It's very, very hard to slow him down because he's always open, even when guys are draped on him.
Last year with Watson, Deshaun Watson, Buck, the RPO slant game, they killed people.
Oh, they wear people out. They wear people out with it. Just unbelievable. He goes and gets it. Deshaun does a great job. He's a masterful ball handler. And then it comes out, and he just goes. If it's anywhere close, he's bringing it in.
I feel like we just took people out. I tried to take you on a little journey here. That's been my scout project here for the last couple weeks. I kind of fill you in there. But I think it is. I think it's valuable. Even if you're a college scout, if you're a college area scout or national scout, director, whatever, and you base in the college game, I think it is important that you circle back and see what works and what plays and what elite level players look like. I always come back to that story I heard a long time ago about people that are studying counterfeiters and trying to find the people that are using counterfeit money. Okay, well, how do you study counterfeit money? Well, they don't spend any time studying counterfeit money. They spend all their time studying the real dollar. And then when they see something that doesn't match up with that, they know it's a counterfeit. So this, to me, is what I do with this project. Let's study the authentic, the real deal, the best of the best, and you'd be able to identify a fraud when you come across one.
Yeah, well, absolutely. You have to know what is playing in the league. More importantly, you got to know what is excelling in the league, because then that'll give you a feel for the traits that are necessary to be a successful player. Also, it will help you categorize guys. So we talk about Adam Thielen, the guy who was a street free agent who made his way into the league. Some of these other guys were guys that weren't necessarily first round picks but found a way to have success. It will help you when it comes to grading to put your guy in the right box, but to say if he does this, if he mastered these things, he can have a level of success that is beyond what his draft status is.
All right, Sully, you want to add anything in here before we wrap it up? It's been 2 weeks. I feel like we just kind of exploded there. 2 weeks worth of content.
That was awesome. That was awesome. Good to get back in it, fellas. I do have to mention all-time great Billy Cannon passed this weekend. Definitely one of the better players.
LSU, right?
LSU. Only LSU Bengal Tiger Heisman Trophy winner. Ran the 100-yard dash, get this, in 9.4. Fast dude. Always remember one of the great college football moments of him and the Halloween punt return to beat number 3 Ole Miss. Definitely one of the greats passing there in Billy Cannon.
So, very cool. Nice little piece there.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Anything else we've got? Anything else?
Do we want to chat Bucky's trip to UCLA real quick before we get out of here?
Oh my gosh, Buck.
Yeah.
Yeah, real
Sorry,
quick.
I went so long on my project.
No.
What happened?
No, it's cool. So what Chip Kelly is doing is Chip Kelly on Wednesdays is opening up UCLA's football office to high school coaches. He'll have a variety of different clinic sessions or whatever. So I got word of it. Some of my guys from Notre Dame High School said, Bucks, you should go over there. So I went over, and the day that I happened to go over, it was an open question answer session where you could ask Chip Kelly anything that you wanted to know about offensive football. He not only would answer it, but he would back it up with film. So when you go over there and you love offensive football like I do, you go over with a bunch of questions trying to figure out what can I get answered. And the thing that was remarkable to me, one, I forgot how explosive his offenses were at Oregon, because we kept putting on clips, guys were running scot-free all over the field. Two, his simplicity to me is really ingenious, because what they do, they run a handful of plays. They just do them in a variety of different ways in terms of the blocking scheme is always the same, but the running backs are different. They may put them sidecar, they put them in the pistol, they may put them on the front side, the back side, but he's a believer of once you find that they can't stop anything, we will continue to do it over and over. And then when it came to game planning, I know in the league, you talk to defense coordinators, like, man, he was so simplistic, you could figure out what he was doing. He basically said, look, we run 6 to 8 concepts. We have a dresser drawer full of different varieties of those concepts that we can get to. We may run 2 or 3 of those different varieties each game, but we believe that we're going to be so good at those 6 to 8 plays that it doesn't matter what you're going to do, we're going to be able to beat you. And it sounded very much like the Vince Lombardi, the John Wooden philosophy of, we're going to do what we do, and we dare you to be able to stop it over time. And so to me, I just thought it was fascinating to be able to sit there and to ask him questions and ask him about all the innovations and things that he's been able to bring to the college game and even the pro game that we now see on a weekly basis on Saturdays and Sundays.
You can tell I'm out of practice with 2 weeks. I don't even get to number 3 on our to-do list here.
It was fun.
Did he say anything about the difference with the college thing versus the NFL thing? Did that come up at all?
Yeah, he talked about the biggest difference was the game is played in the middle of the field in the pros, whereas in the college, because the hashes are wider, you can go from side to side. And he is a big believer in manipulating the hashes to his advantage. Formation into the boundary. If you're a defense, how do you defend it? Do you defend the formation or do you defend the field? He believes playing with pace in college is real advantageous because it takes a lot of the game out of the coordinator's hands, whereas in the pros, because you got the headset, they still are able to be involved. He is a huge believer in the screen game and the bootleg game. And DJ, like, it's funny because he's showing these clips of Mark Sanchez, and he's running the bootleg over and over again. He said, if you don't run a bootleg 6 to 8 times a game, you're wrong. It is always open. The cross is always there, and the defense can never be right. If they're running fast to the run, the bootleg is open. Don't be afraid to do it. And then he talked about the screen game, and he told this story about playing Greg Schiano when they were at New Hampshire, and Greg Schiano was at Rutgers, and Greg Schiano was a big cover zero blitz guy, and how in one game they threw the screen 17 times in a game. And I was like, geez. He was like, hey, if they're not going to stop it, we're going to keep doing it. He did it with a freshman quarterback. And
sounds like something Steve Spurrier would pull off.
Now, I've been on the bad end of that Steve Spurrier thing, and I've seen Steve Spurrier call plays and repeat plays and flip plays and repeat them. But maybe as simple as it is, we always think that we have to do so much more to beat people, and maybe it's finding a couple good things that you're good at and just mastering them.
I love it.
He was great, though.
To me, it's a different way. It's different plays. It's different formations. But it sounds to me like those 90s Cowboys, you know, that's what they did.
Yeah.
They didn't have the pace, but they ran 3 or 4 run plays. They ran 3 or 4 pass plays, mastered them, and beat the snot out of everybody.
And that's what he talked about doing. He said, look, you don't have enough time to do all this other stuff. Figure out what you can do well with your personnel. Do it over and over again. I left there excited to see what he's going to do, because he showed some practice clips and what they're doing at UCLA. And say what you want about his pro stuff. I know there are a lot of coaches in the Pac-12. A little nervous about what he can break out at UCLA.
Oh, it's going to be fun. I love that. Did you get a return invite there? Can you go back again at any point?
I can't. I think this Wednesday they're having a strength and conditioning thing. It would be interesting to hear his take on sports science and how it blends in. I'm waiting to get final confirmation on the invite. But, yeah, he's great. It was open. Like, he was far more open and engaging than he kind of comes off sometimes in media stuff. He was really of the people in that room.
I'm ready for Pac-12 Media Days already, fellas.
Oh, yeah. I know. Are we going back there?
Let's do it.
We got to.
We got to.
Got to go back.
Do they finish, before we get out of here, a couple questions. Does UCLA finish better than fourth in their own division like they did last year with Chip Kelly, year one?
Well, I mean, they're all new coaches, right? Arizona has a new coach. Arizona State has a new coach.
SC obviously has to replace a lot.
SC should be at the top,
right?
Yeah, because they're skilled guys. It doesn't matter. Like Sully, we could put you at quarterback. That should be okay. They got some dudes that could throw it. I think the big thing would be for Chip Kelly and UCLA, I don't know if they have enough speed yet to do what he wants to do. Part of what he was able to do at Oregon, he had a bunch of track stars that seemed like they could run for days on the outside and they could blow you away. I do believe Arizona could be dangerous just because the quarterback, Khalil Tate, can single-handedly run for 300 yards on his own. He can make them dangerous down in the
– We've seen what that coaching staff has been able to do with the athletic quarterback, having Khalil Tate. That dude can take over games.
But, you know, the quarterback that everyone should watch is the kid up at Oregon, Justin Herbert. Like, that dude.
That's a big dude. Bucky, save it. Save it. Save it. Because we're doing another pod this week, right, Sully?
Oh, we got one Thursday.
Yeah. Buck, let's jump in because you mentioned at the top you've been watching some college guys. So let's do – can we mix in some college stuff then? Let's do a college episode on Thursday. Yeah. The world's our oyster right now. We can do whatever
we
heck
we want.
We can
talk all or nothing, too. You just watched the Cowboys all or nothing. I watched the Michigan one, too. You guys really need to check that out if you haven't. Speaking of UCLA, Wilton Spate, he's pretty good in that season. Transferring to UCLA, might get the start for those Bruins. So definitely check out those
all or nothings. Let's go college heavy. I'll spend the next couple days here watching college guys. Bucky's already done a bunch of work on them. So we'll talk some of these top college players, maybe even preview some of the week one games. We can jump in there, what college games we're looking forward to. So we'll have some college fun here on Thursday.
Yes. Now we're talking.
All right, boys. This time I really am wrapping it up. I didn't skip anything else here. Buck, great stuff. Got some storylines in. Love your notes from Chip Kelly. I want to talk to you offline some more about that. It's fascinating. I got a chance to share my thoughts on some NFL tape study that I've been doing. So fun episode. A lot of ground covered. Any final thoughts here, Buck?
No, it was a great one. That was a great episode. Way to bring it back.
Oh, it's nice to be back. Sully, nice to see you, buddy.
Yes, sir. Nice to see you, fellas.
Look forward to Thursday. Chat some college football here on Move to Six. That's going to do it for us. He's Bucky Brooks. I'm Daniel Jeremiah. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to nfl.com/podcasts.